You are listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. On this radio show, we bridge the gulf between technology and poetry, between the practical world of solving problems and the more imaginative, right-brain world of the arts. We have an expert to talk to us about these subjects today, a lawyer who represents an organization with the name of California Lawyers for the Arts. Bob Pym will join us. He's giving a talk tomorrow evening at the Crocker Art Museum called Licensing in the Digital Age, where you can learn about licensing and how an artist's intellectual property can be sold, retained, and optioned. In the final 15 minutes of the program, we'll be joined by Pamela Major. Pamela Major is a lecturer in the University Writing Program at UC Davis, and she's the director of the Writing Ambassadors Program. The Writing Ambassadors Program places student employees, students here at UC Davis, in classrooms, mostly in Yolo County, to help them, help teachers, better understand how writing can be an excellent teaching and learning tool without regard to the disciplines being reviewed. So, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Pym Esquire and Pamela Major, both on today's edition, September 21st, of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're enjoying the music of Arturo Sandoval this evening on this radio show. Today is the 21st of September, which means if you're part of the UC Davis community, you know that tomorrow is the day that classes start. How exciting for all of us. I get to teach a writing and education class this fall, and I'm really looking forward to meeting my students. But right now, I'd like all of you to meet Bob Pym. Bob Pym is a lawyer who is qualified as an attorney and counselor at law to practice in all the courts in the state of California, as well as in federal courts and the U.S. District Court of Northern District of California, as well as the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit. Bob Pym, like myself, is a book lover. He has extensive expertise in all aspects of the book industry, with more than 25 years' experience. He's worked in book industry retailing, distribution, small press publishing, as well as in literary agencies. And he's worked with companies whose names you've heard of, including Barnes & Noble, the Ingram Book Company, small press publishers, and independent bookstores here in the United States. Bob Pym is also the Chief Learning Officer and Director of Legal Services for California Lawyers for the Arts, which is a nonprofit tax-exempt service organization that provides lawyer referrals, dispute resolution services, education programs, publications, and resource library to creative artists of all disciplines and art organizations. Tomorrow evening at 7, people at the Crocker Art Museum in Sacramento will enjoy a talk by Bob called Licensing in the Digital Age, where, if you go, you'll learn about intellectual property, the rights of artists, and ways that artists can protect those rights. It's a great opportunity if you're a student thinking of going into the law or into the world of the arts. I'm very pleased that he could join us here on this radio show. Bob Pym, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So you're coming to give this talk tomorrow at the Crocker Art Museum. If people want to find out more, they can go to crockerartmuseum.org. It starts at 7 tomorrow, and it's called Licensing in the Digital Age. How and why is licensing in the digital age important to people who call themselves creative professionals?
Well, licensing is a tremendous way for people to earn income from their creative arts and to make sure that that there's an organized way of collecting those earnings through a formal arrangement called a license. And the other opposite side of that coin, of course, is that a lot of creative people would like to have access to other creative works, and so they may need to license those materials to include in their creative works. So the talk tomorrow is going to look at this issue from both directions so that people understand what their rights are and how they could potentially earn income through licensing, and also what other creative people's rights are and how they would have to perhaps offer to license their work to include.
And so it sounds like you're looking at this from both the point of view of the producer of the art, the creative professional, but also those creative professionals who would like to consume and use and change and represent, if you will, those original compositions, and no matter the medium.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the interesting things that we see at California Lawyers for the Arts when people come to us for assistance. A lot of times when it's their art that's being used without permission, without a license, they're rather annoyed and they want assistance in how to deal with the matter. But then, on the other hand, we have people who would like to use other people's creative arts, and they want to know if they can do it without permission. So it's really an interesting situation. Depending on where you're standing, the issue of licensing can present itself in different ways.
Many of the listeners of this radio show on KDBS are interested in one way or another in education, either because they're teachers or students, or they've invested heavily in the schools of this particular school district. And many of the educators listening are wondering how exactly and to what extent they can use other people's creative works in the teaching that they do. And because more and more classes are moving into a hybrid environment or an online teaching environment, they're also wondering to what extent the sort of rights that they have to share artworks in the classroom, to what extent are those rights extended to the work that we do as, a different sort of publisher, a publisher of a lecture, say, for students around the city or around the country who are enjoying the fruits of our intellectual labors. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if this is something that you've explored as part of your position at your labor and arts organization.
Well, actually, this is a topic that comes up quite a bit. It's not just for educators, but really for anybody who wants to use these materials that don't necessarily belong to them. And this is a topic that we will be delving into in the talk tomorrow. But in a nutshell, the laws that we're talking about here are copyright laws and how there are certain defenses to what would be, technically speaking, a copyright infringement. And one of those defenses is something called fair use. And there are a whole series of factors, which we'll talk about a little bit more tomorrow, but that one has to go through to see if it's a way that one could defend oneself from a claim of copyright infringement. A lot of people think that fair use is something out there that anybody can just say, ah, fair use, I can use this creative work without asking permission. But in fact, fair use is raised as a defense to a claim of copyright infringement. And certainly teachers in certain circumstances are in a position where they're able to use materials for educational purposes that maybe somebody in a commercial enterprise would not be allowed to do it. In other words, they would be more successful in raising this defense. One thing that, being an attorney, we're rather conservative about these things and have to point out that it's a defense and it doesn't always work. Even when you think you have gone through the checklist of all of the various things that you need to cover, it doesn't always protect an individual. But that is a very important topic for sure.
Right. And I guess some teachers, faculty, would wonder why it is that they need to launch a defense to, use images in a class. I realize it becomes more complicated when the images used in that class, where that class might be videotaped, and part of that lecture, for instance, appear on YouTube. I'm sure that that changes things.
Yes, it does. But it's actually, that your first part of that question is a very important question. That's also something we're going to touch on in the lecture, which is this whole idea about how intellectual property is being so aggressively protected by larger entities who own a lot of valuable intellectual property. Not only are they spending a lot of time trying to figure out what kind of intellectual property they own, but they're doing everything they can to register copyrights, trademarks, everything they can, just inundating the USPTO and the U.S. Copyright Office with ownership claims to try to prevent people from using these materials. And it becomes a big issue as to whether this is stifling to creativity and well beyond the original idea of what copyright was for, and also extremely stifling to the exchange, free exchange of ideas in a democracy. So this is a pretty important point. But given that debate, which I hope we will engage in a little bit at the beginning of the talk tomorrow, beyond that, there are a lot of reasons why when someone has created something original, they ought to be able to protect its use when somebody doesn't ask permission. And so more and more people are creating mechanisms out there to make it easier to get permission, such as things like copyright clearance centers. And when we say licensing, we don't always mean that someone has to pay for it, but it's really a matter of asking permission and having a proper chain of title, so to speak, in the use.
That makes sense. Well, if you're just joining us, my guest is Bob Pym. He's here representing California Lawyers for the Arts, where he works as, remind me what your title is. You're the Chief Learning Officer and Director of Legal Services for California Lawyers for the Arts. Do you have to have a background in education to be a Chief Learning Officer at the CLA, Bob?
No, you don't have to have a background in education to do that. And really, that title is there because what we are about to do is introduce a much more robust education program for creative people in the state of California. And that's going to include a new website featuring an e-learning center where we're going to have webinars and podcasts and e-books and e-documents. And so I'm really working very hard on that project to try to bring content creators together and others together so that we can provide this information at very low cost to creative people. You may not know this, but we have three offices throughout California, but not everybody can get to those offices. So if we have an in-person educational event in San Francisco, some of our members in L.A. may not be able to see it, but if it's provided as an e-learning option, then they'll have an opportunity to participate. Plus, as you know, creative people are all over California, not just in the big cities.
Right.
So a painter working in the Sierra foothills might have a question that they need answered, and this would be a really great way for them to get that answered anytime, any day, anywhere.
Excellent. Well, I have a few questions about specifics that I'm going to ask you after we take this brief break. We're going to hear some jazz by Arturo Sandoval, as someone who's a fan of the arts, you should have been queried before the show on who your favorite jazz artists were so we could represent them. But we'll save that for next time. Can you stay with us through the break and a few more questions?
Absolutely.
All right, great. Bob Pym is my guest, and as I just mentioned, he's the Chief Learning Officer and Director of Legal Services for California Lawyers for the Arts. My name is Dr. Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're chatting this afternoon with Chief Learning Officer and Director of Legal Services for California Lawyers for the Arts. His name is Bob Pym. He's giving a talk tomorrow evening, at the Crocker Art Museum in Sacramento, one of our local art centers. The talk is called Licensing in the Digital Age. Although there is a entrance fee for this talk, it's certainly cheaper if you're a member of the Crocker Art Museum, as I am. If you want to find out more about the Crocker Art Museum or about this talk, you can visit crockerartmuseum.org. They can also be reached via the telephone at 916-808-1182. So let me ask you this, Bob Pym. If I am, say, hosting a poetry reading, and I feel that an image, a piece of artwork would be perfect as the image representing this poetry reading, and I slap that up there on my event. It would only be up for, say, a week before the poetry reading happened. Should I pause and figure out to what extent I need a license to share someone else's image for a week representing a Facebook event?
Well, are you asking that as the person who wants to use it, or the person who might who created it, who might find it on your Facebook page someday without without having been asked permission?
I guess I'm asking as the person who wants to use the image for a week and wants to throw it up on that Facebook event page, rather than as the artist who created it.
Okay. Well, so from your point of view, what you're going to have to do is make a business risk analysis. In other words, you are committing copyright infringement because you're using somebody's creative art without their permission. So then the question becomes whether you think the business risk of using that person's art in an unauthorized manner is worth the risk. So, for example, we talked about fair use as a defense, and there are a whole series of different issues that one would go through in analyzing a copyright infringement risk. And one of them would be perhaps the issue you raised, which is a matter of time, but that would be more related to financial damages or harm to the person for the use.
Right.
So the issue of time doesn't prevent or soften the blow of an infringement. You know, just because you use something for a short period of time doesn't necessarily work. Just like when someone says, "Hey, I just used six notes from that piece of music when I was I sampled six notes from that piece of music." Surely, the fact that I used so few notes should be sufficient protection. And, you know, regrettably, depending on whether those notes are the hook to the song that you borrowed without permission, you know, that might not be suitable. So that's the kind of thing that we would that we would be a good place to come to ask that question, because we'd place you with an attorney who is an expert in that field, and they would be able to help you go step by step through all of the facts of the use to come to the right answer and tell you what your risk is.
That makes sense. I guess in this instance, because it was in support of poetry reading, as you know, poets rarely make money from book sales, and especially hosts of poetry readings make almost usually no money whatsoever from hosting an event. There would be no financial gain to be had. I don't know to what extent this would come into play with regard to damages in this instance, because no one was actually making any money off of the use of an individual image.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a helpful element in the analysis, because ultimately the courts always come down to trying to award somebody damages. There are very few instances in this area where somebody is punished for sort of being morally wrong. So that can happen when you have a sort of very large-scale copyright infringement, and it rises to a criminal level. But in this kind of instance, that would be helpful, that it didn't cost the creative person a significant sum of money by its unauthorized use. So that reduces your risk, because, again, bringing a copyright infringement claim is a very expensive proposition. You'd have to bring it in federal court, and you'd have to have the image registered at the United States Copyright Office and various other things. And so when you're looking at, well, gee, my creative art has been used without my permission, and then you start talking up how much it's going to cost to actually do something about it, right? That plays into the favor of the person who used it without permission. Their business risk analysis takes that into account.
Take, for example, an artist like Banksy. Are you familiar with Banksy's work?
I am not familiar with Banksy's work.
Banksy is this artist about whom the film Exit Through the Gift Shop was made. And Banksy is an artist who does kind of public art displays, often involving stencils, and he'll show up in the middle of the night, often wearing a mask of some sort. He'll spend an hour stenciling something on the side of a building, and then when everyone wakes up and drives around at rush hour, there's this odd piece of art up there on the wall. And we know that Banksy has appeared, and he's created this this piece of art, and then he's disappeared again. I think he's a British artist.
Mm-hmm.
In this instance, Banksy, it seems to me, and I know nothing about the complexities of Banksy's artistic fortunes, but Banksy is not seeking to make any money off of that piece of art. In fact, he's not even willing to say who he is. Like, we don't know anything about Banksy. If I take one of Banksy's images, and I guess this is analogous to the New York Times printing the manifesto of the Unabomber, mm-hmm. where if the artist is not willing to step forward and say, hey, that's mine, in part because he wishes to hold on to his anonymity, then does that mean that if no one is there to defend that claim, that artistic claim, that the rest of us are free to use that sort of public art as we would see fit?
Well, as a practical matter, that certainly plays into your risk analysis, and seems to favor the use of the art without permission. But as it happens, there is a way for artists who don't want to claim financial gain from their art and they want other people to use it. There are mechanisms available for them to do that, which we're going to talk about tomorrow as well. And a phrase that people bandy about a lot, which is, is this in the public domain? And in copyright law, certain things need to happen for something to fall into the public domain, but that doesn't prevent someone from deliberately putting something into the public domain. So a creative artist even though these rights adhere immediately as they create an original work in tangible form, doesn't necessarily mean that they have to claim those rights. So I don't know if that answers your question. On the one hand, it's a situation where someone may have no interest in claiming it, but there are actually formal mechanisms for them to say to the world, I am not interested in claiming my rights, financial or otherwise, related to this art.
And we know that former professor here at UC Davis, Gary Snyder, wrote a poem called Smokey the Bear Sutra in 1969. And he worked for the Forest Service many years ago. Jack Kerouac wrote about this in the Dharma Bums around 1962 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Snyder said, I give everyone and anyone permission to use this poem under any circumstances forever. Mm-hmm. He wrote that right into the introduction of the poem, and therefore people have continued to do so.
Right.
So I guess that's an instance where someone just gave up their rights right from the start.
Right. And there's a whole movement among creative people, especially in the technology side, to think about creative works as collaborative efforts, and that the more creative minds that are applied or work on something together, the better the end results will be. And, how do we, how, as that chain is moving along, do we prevent somebody from stepping out of the chain and trying to commercialize what all these folks have done collaboratively, and to kind of claim a monopoly? And so the sort of open source movement and various other ideas have been developed to try to do the sort of same thing in a kind of organized way.
That makes sense. Well, let me remind folks who must be just joining us that tomorrow there will be a talk given called Licensing in the Digital Age by my guest. His name is Bob Pym, and Bob is the Chief Learning Officer and Director of Legal Services for California Lawyers for the Arts. Let me close by asking you this, Bob, as someone who's worked for a while for California Lawyers for the Arts, I'm wondering if you felt more compelled to do so because of your interest in the law or your interest in the arts. And I'd also be interested to know what sort of artists in any field, whether it be literary, musical, or visual, have really resonated for you as a as an art lover.
Hmm. Well, I would say that probably the working with California Lawyers for the Arts starts primarily from a fascination with artistic work, and also enjoying working with creative people. Not everybody enjoys working with creative people, which surprises me because I like it so much, but a lot of times creative people have such passion for their work that it can sometimes be harder to support and assist than in their work than it would be a more dispassionate corporation who has sort of one goal as opposed to what their creative person might have. So I would say my attraction to working for California Lawyers for the Arts starts from this fascination with the creative arts. And that covers, a wide gamut of interests of, visual art and film and music and literary stuff. And, my private law practices focus on literary works, and, my family's very, very much involved in books. My mom writes books. My brother makes books for the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And so we're just completely steeped in the book ethos. And so it's a lot of fun to work with people for me. And I think that is the case with so many lawyers who work as attorneys for California Lawyers for the Arts. Many of them are either hobbyists or are formerly professional creative people. And therefore, they bring a lot of expertise to their helping of creative people because they do the same kind of art often, or they have worked long years in that field, and so they bring a lot of context to their legal advice. And I think that that makes a big difference, because a lot of arts law is very much based in the context of what's happening.
Interesting. And for you, a favorite musician, artist, author, who do you want to give a plug to?
Who do I want to give a plug to? Well, gee, gosh. I'll give a plug in the authoring world to Sam Harris right now, whose book, The Moral Landscape, I'm reading and enjoying. And it's interesting, the music that you were playing. I love Latin jazz, and Arturo Sandoval would be one of my favorites, so I'll just plug the music that you played.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad I chose something to your liking. And I hope you get a good turnout tomorrow, Bob. I'll remind everyone that my guest, Bob Pym is giving a talk tomorrow, Licensing in the Digital Age, at the Crocker Art Museum in Sacramento. For more information and to investigate the purchase of tickets, one may visit the website crockerartmuseum.org. Bob Pym from California Lawyers for the Arts, it's really been a pleasure to speak with you this afternoon. Thanks very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed myself.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be back soon with Pamela Major.
Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Pamela Major is here in the studio to tell us about the Writing Ambassadors Program. Every quarter during the school year, students have an opportunity, if they're attending UC Davis, to participate in the Writing Ambassadors Program. It's a program that offers students the option of working right in the classroom with teachers and with students with a focus on the power of writing. Writing is a way to clarify, to explain, even in topics where you and disciplines where you might not expect writing to be key, such as science and math. Well, I'm a big proponent of this program, and Pamela Major agreed to come by this afternoon to talk to us about it, and especially talk to undergraduates who are interested in education or writing to see if they might feel compelled to participate in the Writing Ambassadors Program. Pamela Major, welcome back to KDVS.
Well, thank you, Andy. I appreciate the offer and the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely. So before we get into some of the specifics, you founded the, I remember where I was sitting, was in a faculty meeting for where colleagues in the University Writing Program. I was in a faculty meeting where you announced to those of us there that you had received some funding. You had convinced someone, maybe it was Virginia Hinshaw, to fund this particular program, which combines your interest and love for education and writing with the need for all of us to give our students real-world work opportunities. And in this case, it meant the classroom. So how many years ago was that you founded this program?
It's been 11 years now. So
wow.
We've really been able to sustain the program, and I've just had the most wonderful opportunity working with both undergraduates here at UC Davis and teachers in the schools all over the area, and I really appreciate that. We started it with the help of a lot of other people at that time, and through thick and thin have been able to keep up the support for it. And I really want to talk this afternoon to both undergraduates who might be interested in working in schools. Either you think you might be interested in becoming teachers yourselves, or you just want to get some experience in the classroom and maybe give back to the community a little bit and would like to be involved in K-12 education. But I'd also like to talk to any teachers out there, K-12, or anybody working in after school or other kinds of educational programs who might want volunteers from our program to help out in the classroom or programs, tutoring, working with students, and in whatever way possible. We really don't have a set of lessons or anything that anybody is supposed to do when they go into the classroom. We really want to help out as much as possible.
Tell me why this program is situated in the University Writing Program, where you and I teach, versus, say, in education. What is the focus and the reason for the focus and the function of writing with regard to the Writing Ambassadors?
Yes, thanks. I wanted to emphasize that we really want to help out in whatever way we can in the classroom. But we also have a focus, as Andy was mentioning, of ways to use reading and writing as strategies in whatever subject area a student might be working in, whether that's in kindergarten or high school. There are ways that students can learn to read subject matter, whether it's English and literature or social studies or math or science, more effectively for their learning, and also ways to use writing to help them reflect on what they've learned, maybe try to express what they don't know and ask questions. So it becomes another way for students to verbalize what they're doing and get that extra help, and ways for teachers to know what their students need more help on and what they're getting. So we talk with our students about that. The classes that they're in don't have to feature any writing, but if they do, that's wonderful, and we'd like our students to be equipped with the information so that if they can help students in some way through the techniques that we talk about, that's great too. So we talk about general teaching and tutoring strategies that they might use, as well as ways that reading and writing might be beneficial.
Excellent. Well, Pamela Major is here in the studio. We've been talking about the Writing Ambassadors Program. And when we return, I'm going to ask her about how exactly these meetings with students work and what sort of lessons students have learned from the experience of working in local, mostly Yolo County, classrooms. My name is Dr. Andy, and this, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Stick around.
There are many ways to measure success. For the Shriners, it's the nearly 700,000 children with orthopedic and burn problems that they've helped. This is Ricardo Montalban. For over 80 years, the Shriners have provided state-of-the-art medical care to kids all over North America, totally free of charge. There is a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child that the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Pamela Major is here, and we're talking about the Writing Ambassadors Program, which I encourage you to Google. I just found an excellent handout on the UC Davis Writing Ambassadors Program for teachers of any grade and subject matter to let them know that classroom interns are available. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. But first, two things to plug. One, a quick reminder that last Wednesday on this program, we welcomed actors and directors from the Davis Shakespeare Ensemble. Well, the Davis Shakespeare Ensemble has an ongoing production of Midsummer Night's Dream happening last weekend, next weekend, and the weekend thereafter. They've reached more and more success with each production, and now they've moved to a run of 3 weekends instead of just 2. And if you go see one of their shows, you'll see why. Tremendous acting. And they've done a lot to build up the stage elements over in the Arboretum Gazebo. So if you want to find out more, you can visit the website of the Davis Shakespeare Ensemble. And that is shakespeare-davis.com. I'd also like to say, as an aside, that Clarence Major, who's been on this radio show once or twice, has many of his pieces of art, on display at Crapeville. And I mention that because Clarence Major is the husband of my guest, Pamela Major. And Crapeville is, I think, Pamela, your favorite restaurant in Davis, or one of your favorites.
I wouldn't pick one because we do go to several, but
right.
It is one that we very often go to, and you know, it's a nice hangout for everybody, I think, in Davis.
Absolutely. My wife visits Crapeville several times a week. When she pulls up on her Vespa, the staff, they spy her, and they make her Diet Coke so that when she walks in carrying her helmet, they just hand it to her. So, you know, it makes her feel like she's almost Norma Cheers or something.
I was just going to say it's the Cheers.
Right. Only with Diet Coke, of course. So, but we were talking about the Writing Ambassadors program. And I'd like to get a better sense of the actual, experience that you have with these young adults here at UC Davis as you get them to talk about teaching and the different lessons that they've learned from the teaching that they're doing in the classrooms. And it's my understanding that the class meets either on Tuesday evenings or on Wednesday evenings throughout the academic quarter.
Yes, it is UWP 197 TC, and it is a variable unit class, so you can take it from 1 to 4 units, depending on how many hours you work in the classroom primarily. And we meet once a week. We have 2 sections, one on Tuesday from 4:10 to 5:30, and the other one on Wednesday from 4:10 to 5:30. And you can go to writingambassadors.ucdavis.edu to see the flyer with the CRNs and the room numbers. Both classes meet in Olson, but you can see the room numbers for the different sections. And what we do there is we talk amongst ourselves about what experiences you have in the classroom. We share ideas maybe for dealing with some problems and also ideas for maybe something that you've had success with can be helpful to somebody else. We also have some guest speakers. And as I say, we talk about both teaching and tutoring in general and then also the reading and writing strategy. So it's a great workshop atmosphere where we really do share ideas and work together. And I really appreciate it because not only is it K-12, but it also is interdisciplinary so that you are certainly when you go to a credential program, you might well be with somebody or other people who are only in elementary grades or only in secondary grades, and you might be in a particular subject area, and this is a real opportunity to share interdisciplinary stories, and people can usually repeat it for units. So we do something different each quarter. And if you aren't sure if you want to teach elementary or secondary, you can do one quarter and the other another quarter, and just get an idea of where you might like to teach and how you might like to teach and see different teachers as models of things that you might want to do. So these are all things that we share together in the classroom.
That's great. It sounds like in the sort of student-centered approach that you take in the class, that students can learn not only from you as the senior instructor, but from all the teachers and wannabe teachers in the classroom, that even your experience, even my experience, is somewhat limited in that we've only taught a certain number and kind of classes. But when you have all of these young teachers sharing stories at once, really gives you a sense of the wide range of teaching opportunities as well as joys and challenges.
Exactly. So it is a wonderful group to work with, and I feel very privileged.
Can you give us an example, one story that you remember of a student who had an experience in a local school and what he or she might have learned from that experience?
Well, there are just so many examples, and one reason beyond what we talk about in class that I have the opportunity to know so much about what goes on is that the students in the classroom, you would keep a journal and then write a paper about your experiences. So not only do I have that verbal feedback and the verbal conversation that we have, but I also get to read what you've written. And I think that reflection on the part of you as people in the classrooms and learning is very, very beneficial for you in the future and also for us in the program. And one particular story I remember is of a student who was working in a fourth grade class in Woodland, and she was working with a group of students who were reluctant readers, and they really didn't understand why they should be reading or didn't really enjoy it. And so she made a game out of it with them, and they were all reading to one another and reading out loud, and they got really excited and involved, and it really helped them. And what she also did was use a technique where she had them come up with questions for each other about what they were reading. So again, that game atmosphere and challenging one another got them excited and really interested. So that was a place where, in working with them individually, she was able to get them to be involved in what they were doing and work together.
What a terrific story. Great. And so I'm going to move to a different topic in just a moment, but remind me the website that people should go to if they want to find out more information about the Writing Ambassadors program.
Yes, it's writingambassadors.ucdavis.edu, but you can also reach it from the main writing program website. So we do have a link there, and you can get to the program that way as well.
Excellent. And as the new chair of the Publicity and PR Committee for the University Writing Program, I encourage all of you to go visit that website and take a look around. Let me know if you think something needs to be improved. All right. My name is Dr. Andy. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And when we return, Pamela Major and I will have a quick discussion about paper, the liberation from paper that is possible in this technological world, and how many decades of paper it takes to fill four entire trash bins, industrial-sized trash bins of recycled paper. So more on that when we return. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Flown around the world in a plane. I've settled revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I have charted, but I can't get started with you. Around the golf course.
This is Dr. Andy with an important message about the Bike Barn. Since 1971, the ASUCD Bike Barn has helped fix and maintain the bicycles of students, faculty, and staff at UC Davis while adapting to the growth of the university. The Bike Barn offers the tools to fix your own bike as well as skilled technicians to repair it for you. The Bike Barn has over 150 rental bikes for recreational use for students, campus staff, and visitors. It's located on One Shields Avenue next to the Silo Union and is open Monday through Friday year-round from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. I often stop by myself during the work hours and fill up my tires. For more information, you can visit bikebarn.ucdavis.edu. If you're wondering, we're listening to the Latin jazz of Arturo Sandoval. This particular track is called I Can't Get Started. Thanks very much for getting started with KDVS this afternoon. You might have an exciting evening planned. You might be heading over to the Davis Farmers Market soon. I'll be biking by before too long. I'd like to give you a quick preview of an event that's coming up in a few weeks on October 6th, that Thursday, that first Thursday in October. Sandra Gilbert will be giving a poetry reading at the John Atsoulis Gallery. Sandra Gilbert is the author of more than 20 books, including 9 books of poetry. She's a past president of the Modern Language Association. She's won a number of prizes, including the American Book Award, and is recognized as one of the foremost living feminist literary scholars. She'll be making a trip over from Berkeley on October 6th to give a reading in support of her new book. It's called Aftermath. So you can check out more about that at poetryindavis.com. Pamela Major is here, and we have just a couple minutes to talk about paper and how great it feels to get rid of paper. But first, Pamela, we were talking a lot about elementary school students with regard to the Writing Ambassadors program. If people are interested in teaching the upper grades, is there room for people with a focus on high school?
Absolutely. I just wanted to emphasize this definitely is K-12. So if you're interested in high school physics or junior high social sciences or algebra or whatever, this is the program for you.
Excellent. My daughter's going to Harper Junior High, and we got to meet all of her teachers at Back to School Night, and we were enthused about every single one of them. So it'd be great to see what they could do with a writing ambassador to further help out in the classroom. All right, so I've left us only a couple minutes for this discussion about paper, but tell us how you spent your summer, Pamela Major.
Well, I did spend my summer trying to clean out my office a little bit and just make it a little bit more workable. And since it is my 22nd year here in Davis, I had a lot of paper.
And this is your on-campus office.
This is my on-campus office. So, yes, you haven't seen the one at home. But so I did. I spent all summer going through and making decisions, and I did fill up 4 large recycling bins of paper, and it feels great. I wish that I had everything digitally available now, but I also would need to be more organized, both on the line as well as in my office.
Well, it seems to me that if you decide to teach for another 20 years, it's unlikely that you'll generate quite as much paper or that your students will. Over the coming 2 decades, as happened over the last 2.
Absolutely. And for future teachers, the whole world is changing with respect to using the facilities and resources as well as ability to save paper that the internet and other online things give us.
This was the first quarter that my book rep offered me a iPad version of the textbook that I'm teaching with this quarter, Kaleidoscope. I bet that's a book that you're familiar with. And I look forward to just carrying around this slim iPad instead of that hefty tome.
Yeah, it's great. That's a wonderful opportunity for students to get access to books without having to buy them.
Absolutely. Well, let's remind folks that we are talking about the Writing Ambassadors program. And you can find out more by visiting writingambassadors.ucdavis.edu. I'd also like to say that there is going to be a talk tomorrow called Licensing in the Digital Age with Bob Pym. Thanks very much to Bob for joining me. That's at the Crocker Art Museum. Thanks very much to Bob for joining me in the first half of the program. And for Pamela Major, my colleague in the University Writing Program, coming into the studio to tell us about the Writing Ambassadors program in the second half of the show. Pamela, I enjoyed catching up here.
Well, thank you. I really appreciated talking with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Folks, stick around because DJ Tangasaurus Rex is here, and she's got some terrific music that she's picked out on her radio show, Cool and Deadly, which goes from 6 until 8 p.m. If you want more great music, we'll keep it right here at KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. This has been Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. See you next week.